Now it's time for On the Record. Maryland and many other states are facing teacher shortages, and yet the teaching profession loses 1 out of 5 teachers by their 5th year in the classroom. Educational researcher Linda Darling-Hammond says a range of factors, like planning time and access to materials, shape teachers' decisions.
You go into teaching typically not for the money, but because you want to help kids, and schools that support teachers to do good work are much more capable of keeping them in the profession. Those that make it even harder to do the job get a continual revolving door.
More on that, plus a conversation with 2 Baltimore principals about how they are supporting their teachers and fostering collaboration at their schools. It's On the Record with Sheila Cast. But first, the news. You're listening to On the Record, the podcast, a service of your public radio, 88.1 WYPR. Find more podcasts online at wypr.org. And tell us what you think. Send an email to ontherecord@wypr.org.
Good morning, I'm Sheila Cast. We're On the Record. Maryland needs teachers. The U.S. Department of Education reported that during the last school year, Maryland experienced teacher shortages in more than a dozen subjects, including art, music, math, biology, and all of middle school education. And these shortages stretched across all counties but one, Worcester County. A longitudinal study by the federal government found that nearly 1 in 5 teachers leaves the profession by their 5th year of teaching. Learning Policy Institute, a nonprofit, nonpartisan education research group, published a report last fall that 9 out of 10 of open teaching positions are created when teachers leave the profession, as opposed to new teaching jobs being created. And 2/3 of those teachers left for reasons other than retirement, reasons like lack of mentoring and poor administrative support. What encourages teachers to stay in the classroom? What drives them out? And how are students affected? Linda Darling-Hammond is the president of the Learning Policy Institute and founder of Stanford University's Center for Opportunity Policy in Education. She's also a past president of the American Educational Research Association. Linda, welcome to On the Record.
Glad to be there.
Where has this crisis reached a boiling point? What states are really strapped for teachers?
More than 40 states have shortages of special education teachers, math and science teachers. Out here in the West, California and Nevada, Oklahoma, you see very, very high levels of shortage. In the East Coast, of course, you see the spot shortages that you've described in Maryland. So it's widespread, but it's especially pronounced in some parts of the country and in schools and districts that serve high poverty populations of students and students of color, where the ratio of uncertified teachers is about 4 times greater. So we worry about both locations and different fields.
How expensive is it for school districts to lose teachers and have to recruit new ones?
Much more expensive than many people think. In an urban area, you're likely to spend over $20,000 recruiting a new person to replace someone who has left. In a rural or suburban district, it's a little bit less. But if you think of what you could have done with that $20,000, you know, per person in terms of supporting mentoring and professional learning, quite often those investments would have kept someone in the profession rather than watching them leave.
Your group, the Learning Policy Institute, released a report last fall titled A Coming Crisis in Teaching, Teacher Supply, Demand, and Shortages in the U.S. What factors determine why teachers leave, and where does the data you use come from?
Well, we've been analyzing a set of national data sets that are surveys and tracking systems for figuring out who's coming into teaching, who's leaving, why they're leaving, and so on. And the biggest reasons for people leaving are several. One is if you're underprepared and unmentored as a beginning teacher, the odds that you will leave are much, much greater. In addition, teachers leave because of working conditions. They're always flagging administrative support when teachers are surveyed. That can include many things. Often it means, do I have good colleagues who are available to plan with me and to support my learning and decision making? It also means, do I have the materials that I need to do a good job? Do I have the pupil loads and class sizes that will allow me to do good work? Mostly teachers want to be effective and efficacious. You go into teaching typically not for the money, but because you want to help kids. And schools that support teachers to do good work are much more capable of keeping them in the profession. Those that make it even harder to do the job get a continual revolving door.
I mean, you said people go into teaching generally not for the money. Does compensation play a role, though, in the teacher shortages and teachers leaving?
It does. It plays a role both on recruitment and retention. During the periods when teaching salaries are most competitive with other occupations, you usually see both more people coming into the profession and fewer people leaving the profession. So it does matter. And right now, salaries have been going down since the early 1990s. It does vary from state to state, but it does play a role.
This is On the Record on WIPR. I'm Sheila Cass, speaking with Linda Darling-Hammond, President and CEO of the educational research group, the Learning Policy Institute. We're talking about how school districts can attract and retain teachers. You touched on this earlier. I'd like to get back to the impact of teacher turnover on vulnerable students, special education students, English language learners, students at Title I schools. Tell us more about that.
Well, teacher turnover has a negative effect, generally speaking, on all students in schools that have high rates of turnover. There is a decline in achievement associated with that. It's even more problematic for students who are most vulnerable, special education students, English learners. Turnover is much higher in Title I schools, which serve low-income students, and it is higher in the fields of special education and teachers of English learners. So the benefit that those students would get from having more experienced teachers who are more effective is harder for them to experience. And we, as a field, have less expertise to make good decisions in schools and to create the programs and teaching situations that will help those students succeed.
The Learning Policy Institute put together an interactive map that reflects teacher experiences in different states. What did your research reveal about teaching in Maryland?
Well, one of the things that we would applaud Maryland for is having done some work to improve wages relative to other states, although they're still not competitive with other occupations in Maryland. And Maryland has done some work to maintain reasonable class sizes. However, teachers in Maryland were not happy at the moment of the last surveys that informed this map. About 11% said they plan to leave teaching as soon as possible, almost twice the rates in other states across the country. There was a disproportionate number of inexperienced teachers and uncertified teachers. And the ratio of uncertified teachers in high minority schools to those in low minority schools was 12 to 1. That means if you're a student in a minority school, you're 12 times more likely to have uncertified teachers. That was extraordinary in terms of the degree of inequality in Maryland relative to that in other states. The same was true for inexperienced teachers. So the picture that emerges in Maryland is that some headway has been made, but it has not been made in an equitable fashion.
And from what you told us earlier, those unqualified or alternatively qualified or inexperienced teachers are the more likely to leave. So there's a prospect for more turnover in those very schools.
Exactly. They're both typically less effective and more likely to leave. And, you know, particularly for kids who may not experience a great deal of stability in the community, having stability and expertise to meet their needs in their schools is extraordinarily important, not only for them, but also for the society as a whole, because we all benefit when kids are well educated and can become productive members of the society and of the workforce.
Some of Maryland's neighboring states, particularly West Virginia and Pennsylvania, came out much better on the rankings. What are they doing that Maryland is not doing?
Well, every state has its pluses and minuses, so I wouldn't want to make rash comparisons, but I would say that in general, in Maryland, there has been a significant inequality across districts, which is less pronounced in West Virginia. And there is also the policy framework that Maryland has had in recent years, which was a pretty hard-driving approach to high-stakes accountability. Now, all of that is changing in many, many states as the new federal law takes hold. And Maryland has a commission looking at its next steps forward. So I would expect to see some changes that occur now and in the future with respect to the supports for the teaching profession.
Demand for teachers is continuing to grow. LPI predicts student enrollment will grow by 3 million over the next decade. So over the long term, what can school districts do to retain and attract teachers?
When we move to attract teachers, it's really important to attract people who are coming in well prepared and be sure that they are well mentored when they arrive so that they can both be effective and make a commitment for the long term. If we do that, we'll reduce the turnover, and that will mean that demand will be less and we'll be much more able to keep up. It's also important to treat teachers well once we get them, and to be sure that they're getting the kind of professional learning opportunities, that they're working in collegial workplaces, that they have the tools and materials both to do their jobs and to get better at doing their jobs, because teachers who stay are those who feel that they are being successful with students and getting the satisfactions that they came into the profession to achieve. One thing that I think very few people realize is that in the United States, our teachers work more hours per week and per year in terms of their contact with students than teachers in any other country in the world, and have less time in their schedules for planning and learning and collaboration than teachers in most other countries. Class sizes are actually larger than the international averages, and teachers here teach more students who are low income because we've allowed child poverty to grow to such a level that one out of four children lives in poverty in this country, and half of public school students are eligible for free and reduced price lunches. So the job has become grueling. The supports for children and teachers have been reduced. And if we want to create a long-standing, successful teaching force, we both have to make the work of teaching more sustainable, and we have to make the lives of children more supported.
Which, like many of your recommendations, it involves additional funding. I mean, is that essentially what this comes down to, that public decision makers have to decide how much to invest and to invest more?
Yeah, to invest more in our people. I mean, I really think we're at a moment where, you know, income disparity is as large as it was in 1929, where the rate of childhood poverty is much higher than it was in the 1970s, where we have to make the kind of commitment that was made in the 60s and 70s to investing in our people. Now, in some ways, it does cost more money for education and for those investments in healthcare and so on. On the other hand, we are right now throwing money away by being penny wise and pound foolish. In many states, the level of incarceration has grown by 400% over the last few decades. And we will spend, for example, in California, $60,000 a year to incarcerate a young person that we wouldn't spend $10,000 on per year to get them well educated. There's a huge correlation between literacy rates and incarceration rates. So we have to decide how we want to spend the money that we spend in ways that really are productive for people and for the society.
Linda, you've given us a lot to think about. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
Linda Darling Hammond is president and CEO of the nonprofit, nonpartisan education research group, the Learning Policy Institute. At the On the Record page at WIPR.org, we will link to the Institute's report on teacher supply and demand. Quick break now. On the Record, I'm Sheila Cass. Stay with us.
This is the On the Record podcast, a service of Your Public Radio, member-supported 88.1 WYPR. You can support this podcast and everything you hear from WYPR. Become a member. Come to WYPR.org and click the donate link.
Welcome back to On the Record. I'm Sheila Cast. We're talking today about teacher turnover. The U.S. Department of Education estimates that 1 out of 5 teachers leaves the profession by their 5th year of teaching. As we just heard from education researcher Linda Darling Hammond, mentoring and work conditions play a big role in recruiting and retaining teachers. Now we'll hear from 2 Baltimore principals who have been successful at keeping teachers in the profession and at their schools. Joining us by phone is the principal of North Bend Elementary Middle School, Patricia Burrell. North Bend is located in southwest Baltimore. It's a Title I school, meaning it serves a high percentage of children from low-income families. Patricia Burrell has been its principal for 10 years. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
How is the retention at North Bend?
We have a very low turnover. I guess our average would be maybe 1 teacher or even fewer per year leave North Bend. So our teachers stay.
And why is that?
I think it's about the climate and the culture that we produce for our teachers. The teachers feel supported, they feel welcome to the profession, and they have opportunities to grow here at North Bend.
And I want to get into those. Your effort to make sure that teachers fit in at North Bend starts while a teacher is being hired. Tell us about that process.
Yes, we actually have a great partnership with UMBC. We are a professional development site, so we sort of grow our own teachers. So we watch teacher interns grow over the year, and we've been able to hire teachers through the UMBC.
What steps have you taken to make sure teachers feel supported by their peers?
Well, we structure our teams, collaborative teams and content teams, where teachers are on teams together. Teaching can be an isolated profession, but our teachers every day are collaborating with one another. We set aside 1 hour of collaborative planning time per day for each teacher here in the building. And during that time, they work at improving instructional strategies, looking at student work together, learning from one another, then they feel a part of a team.
How are you able to make that schedule work, an hour a day of collaborative planning?
It's about resources that we have in the building, using our budget and finances wisely so that we can provide teachers with that time and provide our students with extracurricular activities. So during that time, students are participating in things like art and music and PE.
What leadership opportunities are open to teachers at North Bend?
I try to allow our teachers to lead. They lead either from their classroom or within the building and across the district. So, for example, teachers have had opportunities to be the summer school principal. So during the months, summer months, so that we can combat summer learning loss, we choose teachers who want to lead that effort. So they lead the summer school. They create their summer school. So they have opportunities to lead there. And during the year, they're team leaders. They serve on our instructional leadership team. They look at the data with leadership. We make decisions together. They have say-so. They have a voice. They're involved in the decision-making of our school.
You have given us some idea of this, but let me ask, how else do you, as principal, make sure there are good lines of communication between teachers?
I try to keep an open-door policy. I try to be as open as possible, as transparent as possible. I communicate to my teachers in multiple ways, whether it's a face-to-face conversation or daily news blast. They know that I'm here for them. They can come into my office at any time to share ideas or to collaborate or to just talk to me about anything that they need to do to grow professionally. Also, I support them emotionally. Teachers sometimes need that emotional support outside of the profession that I try to provide for our teachers. So again, they have that feeling of family, of collaboration, of working together, that I support all of their needs, emotional needs, professional needs, and instructional needs.
It does sound very supportive. I appreciate your telling us about it. Thank you.
Oh, you're welcome.
Patricia Burrell is principal of North Bend Elementary Middle School in Southwest Baltimore. This is On the Record on WIPR. I'm Sheila Kast. We're talking today about how principals can make the difference when it comes to keeping teachers in the profession. Joining us now is the principal of Commodore John Rogers Elementary Middle School, Mark Martin. He is in his eighth year at Commodore, which is located in East Baltimore. In 2010, Commodore was ranked one of the lowest performing schools in Maryland. It was labeled a turnaround school and received federal grants to support improvement. In the years since, enrollment has risen from 250 to 900 students, and Commodore John Rogers has exited the turnaround list. Principal Martin, welcome to On the Record.
Thanks for having me.
How is the retention at your school? How has it changed since the turnaround?
Retention has been fabulous. I think the retention of our staff is directly responsible for a lot of the positive changes that have happened in our school. You know, when we first started, we turned around the entire staff, but one of the biggest things for school change is around school stability, and that's directly correlated to staff returning. So every year, we have about a 90% return rate. Just a couple of years ago, we actually only had one staff member leave, and that was the result of them just making a life change and getting married and having a child, which is a wonderful thing, but they moved out of Baltimore, and that was the reason why we lost one staff member that year.
But for the most part, 9 out of 10 of your teachers are staying these days.
That is correct. That is correct.
How do you make sure that teachers will fit into the atmosphere of Commodore?
Yeah, I think the biggest thing is onboarding staff members. The biggest thing that staff want when they come to join a place, whether you're in a school or anywhere else, is they want to be a part of something. They want to be part of a team. And a lot of that begins with them feeling welcomed, them not feeling anxious about not just the work, but also their colleagues and their fit there. So one of the proactive things that we've done, in addition to just mentoring around, you know, performance in the classroom, has been just having an ambassador program at our school. With this program, our teachers that are new to the school, whether they are first-year teachers or experienced teachers that are new to the building, get paired up with staff members at our school that have been here for a few years. The purpose of this program is to just, again, build relationship and give folks, you know, a closer relationship with someone on staff so that when the going gets tough, when there are challenges that arise, they have someone that they can reach out to and go directly to if something is needed.
And what about teachers who are new to the profession?
For teachers who are new, in addition to becoming part of the ambassador program, we also make sure that they get hands-on mentoring and coaching from staff members. One of the things that we realize is tough for a new teacher is they just feel like they're on an island. One of the ways to make sure that they're part of this community is to have colleagues come into their room, check in on them, support them, but also give them some coaching advice when it comes to their performance in the classroom. The fact that it's coming from a colleague makes it non-threatening. It's not their principal or an administrator giving them, you know, hard feedback right off the bat. Instead, it's viewed as more supportive because it's the teacher next door that's really looking after them and making sure that that teacher knows that they don't need to worry about people judging them. Instead, they're there to answer any questions or help support if it's needed.
You have changed the schedule at Commodore John Rogers in order to allot more planning time on Fridays. Tell us about that.
That's exactly right. So every week, all of our staff comes together for professional development. It obviously benefits the entire staff. But when you're thinking about new teachers to the profession, in addition to the retention of all teachers, it's this idea that we're a collaborative community. In order to, you know, make sure that people are working together, you have to make the time for that. And that's what weekly professional development does. Every Friday for 2.5 hours, our staff comes together. Some of it is training, but a lot of it is just collaborative planning and problem solving. Teachers will come together in addition to planning and looking at future lessons. They'll also share some of the struggles that they're facing, whether it's related to student data, whether it's related to, you know, student management, whether it's related to just tough conversations with families. They're able to, you know, share these issues, and people are able to work together and create a plan so that there could be a different outcome. And I think it's something that our staff looks forward to. Again, you know, if you think about it, teachers are teaching for about 7 hours a day. They're teaching children. We love the job. We love the work that we do, but they're also working with 12-year-olds and younger. And so to have the opportunity to work with adults, to work with peers, to work with other professionals on a regular basis, and it's not something that is out of the ordinary, but something that you can look forward to and depend on, really helps people develop, and it really makes people feel like they're part of a larger community, a place that they want to make a home, a family.
Well, it seems to be working. Congratulations.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
Mark Martin is principal of Commodore John Rogers Elementary Middle School in East Baltimore. This is On the Record. I'm Sheila Cass. Glad you've been listening. Join us again tomorrow.
Thanks for listening to this segment of On the Record with Sheila Cast. You can catch the show on the radio Monday through Friday, 9:30 to 10 a.m. on 88.1 WYPR, your NPR news station. And you can support On the Record and all the other public radio programs that WYPR brings to you. Just click the donate link at the top of WYPR.org. And thanks.